This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If you go to the movies or watch TV, then you probably know the work of my guest, Gary Marshall. He created the sitcoms Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, The Odd Couple, and Mork and Mindy. He directed the box office smash Pretty Woman, as well as The Flamingo Kid, Nothing in Common, and Beaches. Gary Marshall's new film, Frankie and Johnny, stars Al Pacino and Michelle Pfeiffer as an unlikely couple who fall in love while working at a diner. The screenplay was written by Terrence McNally, who also wrote the off-Broadway hit the film was based on. The play starred Kathy Bates, who's best known now for her role in Misery. But in spite of her rave reviews as Frankie, Bates didn't get the part in the film. Michelle Pfeiffer gives a terrific performance, but, you know, sometimes it seems that a starring romantic role has to go to a beautiful actress. And if the character she's playing isn't supposed to be beautiful, and Frankie is not supposed to be beautiful, well, you just mess up that beautiful actress's hair and don't use any makeup. So is Kathy Bates turned down because she's not pretty enough?
Well, you could assume that. I don't know if that's really the right assumption. I when you do a film, particularly a love story, the key element is really not the actors so much as the chemistry between the actors, because in most love stories, there is kissing, and there is some heat, and particularly this story from the play was quite sensuous and sexual, so we wanted that to match it. It didn't matter which two people we had. We just wanted two people that would match. So the difficulty was not the girl. We considered Kathy Bates and everybody else for the part. It was just a matter of getting the guy. And there were only a few men that we were interested in that we felt could play it. One early casting was Jack Nicholson and my sister Penny. So we went all over the place with this. But when we got Al Pacino, then we were trying to get a match for Al Pacino. And we went from Laurie Metcalf, who is not the most glamorous star or beautiful star, to Michelle Pfeiffer and various other people. We finally, in the reading, settled that Michelle and Al had the best chemistry, and we went that way. It is something that has been discussed, and I think when Kathy Bates heard that Michelle was getting the part, she did laugh. But I think that's it's okay. That's part of show business. Terrence himself felt that the girl in Frankie and Johnny was never not attractive. It was just a girl who closed up and didn't care how she looked. And I think what Michelle's performance speaks for itself in the film.
Now, you had a huge hit in Pretty Woman. Did you expect that to be the phenomenon that it was?
No, I didn't expect that at all. We were just making a picture, but in that picture, in reference to what we were speaking about before, I was going with pure beauty. In other words, when I did Beaches, it was about a friendship of two women, so glamour and the beauty didn't really matter that much. Bette Midler and Barbara Hershey did it very real, and I thought very nicely. But in Pretty Woman, I was trying to put the two prettiest people I could up on that screen, because I always approached it as a fairy tale. Even though the original script was not that, the decision at Disney, before they hired me, they wanted to make it kind of a fantasy fairy tale and asked me if I had an angle on it, which I did. So we did it. It was very inexpensive as movies goes. We did it for about $15 million, and we shot it relatively fast, and I just felt that Julia Roberts had a smile and a connection to that camera that not necessarily in real life, but with a camera, sometimes that phrase, a camera loves you, the camera certainly loved her, and that I thought was very special. I thought she would emerge a star out of the film, but I had no idea the film would go all over the world. Is what I mean. In India, for 45 cents, they stood in line, and so that was very rewarding, I must say, because I went around the world with it, and to see people in other countries sitting, laughing, and smiling, and feeling good was nice. It was nice for a filmmaker to see that.
You know, I'm glad you said you saw this as a fairy tale, because, the ending is almost a shamelessly happy ending in which, you know, the whore with a life force that brings other people to life is romantically joined with one of the wealthiest and most attractive men in America.
Well, it was, my approach was a fairy, it was Cinderella and the whole thing, Prince Charming. And it was just, I think I was just saying it, you know, you should always keep in mind it might happen. We should never throw that away in this day and age. It's a possibility. But I went the opposite with Frankie and Johnny in saying that Frankie and Johnny, Frankie is sure that Prince Charming got hit by a truck and is not coming. And Johnny knows Cinderella never got out of the kitchen to go to the ball and they're not coming. So the chances that their Prince Charming might be somebody who, a regular person with imperfections and, you know, a broken sword and the horse limps and he don't show up on time. But most of in real life our Prince Charmings and Cinderella are people with imperfections, but we love them anyway.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Gary Marshall, and he directed the new movie Frankie and Johnny. He also directed Pretty Woman and Beaches and created a bunch of sitcoms, including Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and Mark and Mindy. Now, how did you get into show business? You started off as a stand-up comic, right, doing your own material.
Yes, that's why my eye is always comedic in a way. Because can I just say something? See, I sound like such a smooth talker. It's the way this public radio sounds. It's very calming. I try to do it with Frankie and Johnny with the announcer at the end. He talks like this. A lot of radio. They talk like this. How are you? Come on. This is very smooth. I like this. I'm just so calm. It's like you could do this for stress. You could just come here and talk and you go around like this. But yes, I started as a journalist, actually. I graduated from Northwestern Medill School of Journalism, and with my degree, discovered once out in the real world I wasn't very good at it. And I wasn't really that good at being a musician, and then I tried being a stand-up. I was an actor. I was a photographer. I tried everything. Nothing was particularly working for me. But then as a musician, I wrote jokes for comics, and they started to buy my jokes, and that's where I thought maybe that might work.
And that did pretty good?
Well, yeah, I always remember writing a page of jokes for a comedian and handing it to him backstage at a club, and he read it and then took his cigarette lighter and lit the page on lit it on fire and let it float into the wastebasket. A flaming rejection, I chalked it up to. And I must, you know, be very serious. I went home and cried a little bit. But, you know, when you want something or you have a passion for it, I guess I talked myself into the fact that I thought he might have smiled just a little bit by reading it before he set it on fire. So maybe something good was there. But after a while, everybody threw my jokes away. But then I heard them on the television, so I knew they were stealing them, so I figured I had a shot.
So you had to learn how to write for different kind of comics who were, by the way, of an older generation than you were. Can you think of, like, what was a good Joey Bishop joke or a good Phil Foster joke?
Well, for Joey Bishop, always was kind of the lost soul, so I did a traffic joke. So I drove from... The traffic was so heavy that I drove from New York to Long Island in neutral. You know, no jokes of that sort. Like, this, nothing startling, but I just was consistent with it. But from Phil Foster, I must confess, I learned to write the truth. In other words, he said, if you use your imagination, you'll be out of the business in a week. He says, you got to get a comedy eye. You got to look at life in a funny way, and then you'll never run out of material. And he taught me how to do that. And anything I do, I have that. In Frankie and Johnny, there's a shot where somebody got killed. The cops threw the body on the street. And always I remember that when I was a kid in New York, we used to make everything a game. So there's a scene where guys are pitching pennies into the dead body outline, which gets a very good humorous reaction from the audience. But it's really based on, to me, truth that I saw things like that.
Right. Now, how did writing for other people lead to sitcoms?
Well, people always say, well, how do you get through show business? How do you swim the waters? And how do you survive and all that? I had a very solid method, and that is team up with ambitious partners. It works for me. I was not very ambitious. I just wanted to have quiet, calm, listen to public radio, say, hello, how are you? Sit down, rest. But I had an early partner named Fred Freeman, a wonderful writer who I met at Northwestern, and I thought we were doing very well with Jack Parr, and he said, no, we got to go to Hollywood. We got to write sitcom. It's the coming thing. And I really wasn't too interested in writing Father Knows Best and Ozzy and Harriet, I thought they were pleasant enough, but it wasn't really what I wanted to do. And then this new show came on called Bilko, Sergeant Bilko. And I said, oh my, this is what I want to do. This is funny. And so he convinced me, Fred Freeman, to go to Hollywood. And we went to Hollywood to write sitcom. Joey Bishop actually paid my way to Hollywood.
Did you write for Bilko?
No, never got to write for Bilko, but that was what was, to me, the standard to aim for. And so I wrote for Danny Thomas, Joey Bishop. The old Dick Van Dyke Show was a great education for me. I wrote 3 years for Lucille Ball. She taught me everything I know about physical comedy, which I went on to teach Laverne Shirley and even Michelle Pfeiffer and Kate Delegan in some areas. You learn from them. My partner after Fred Freeman was Jerry Belson. And Jerry Belson, after I was doing so well writing situation comedy, said, this is not good enough. We got to create our own shows. I said, but we're very happy doing this. No, 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 you got to get your own show. So he made me, and he and I created our own shows. And we actually create everything we created failed. Hey Landlord was our first show, 99th in the ratings. But imagine this. It's a great reflection on the years. Hey Landlord truly was 99th in the ratings, yet we stayed on an entire year. You know how fast the show goes today?
If it's not
in the top 40, it's gone. We were 99th, we stayed. But then I went on, the first show was The Odd Couple, which Jerry Belzer insisted we adapt, and we did, and it was a great experience.
You said you learned everything you know about physical comedy from writing for Lucille Ball.
Yes. And
that you passed on some of that to Michelle Pfeiffer. Is there an example that you could tell
us? Well, I first did my sister Penny and Cindy LaVersion. No, but some of the stuff in Frankie and Johnny, there's a scene where they... a customer is very rude to the waitress, and we ask waitresses what happens when people are rude to you. What do you do, and this and that? And there's a whole physical bit they do together with this guy. You gotta go to see Frank and Johnny to see this. But it's stuff like that, and that I learned how to do it from Lucy, how to time it, how to be in the right spot with the camera. That you never do a physical joke that in any way would harm another person. For instance, if in this particular case they spilled ice water on this customer. Now, the original thought when I was doing it, people came up to me and said, no, hot coffee. I said, no, hot coffee is not funny. Hot coffee will hurt him. And then I very carefully cast an actor in the part of the one the waitress was attacking that would not get sympathy for the audience. You can't have an actor who the audience says, oh, that poor sweet guy. You got to get somebody who's like nondescript in a way or just somebody that looks a little like they should get it. So this is all I learned actually from Lucy.
Well, let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. My guest is Gary Marshall, and he directed the new movie Frankie and Johnny. He directed Pretty Woman and Beaches, and he created such sitcoms as Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and Mork and Mindy. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Gary Marshall is my guest. Now, in writing for the Dick Van Dyke Show, was it fun to write for a character who basically did what you used to do? Because Dick Van Dyke used to write. I mean, the character used to be the head writer for, a guy who did a variety show.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I used to. It was about my days when I wrote variety shows. Beside Jack Parr, we did the Danny Thomas specials and a lot of specials, and it was fun to write. But the way writers write on the old Dick Van Dyke Show, the way we portrayed them is not how we really do it. But it was good that was a better thing more interesting for the public to see. The way we really do it is we sit around the room and all Carl Reiner would run these sessions, and you would think of all the most embarrassing moments in your life and all the horrifying things that happened to you. See, I wrote for a lot of the old comics, but I wrote for the young comics, and a great influence on me was Lenny Bruce, who really you couldn't write for, but you could kind of pitch with and learn about it. And his formula always was very clear, which was pain plus time equals humor. So the way we got most of the humor was we had to think about our pain that had been done in the past and turned it into humor. Example on the old Dick Van Dyke Show, this is radio, but you can picture this, folks. I have some moles on my back, and my mother, sensitive woman once in a while said to me when I was 9 years old, you have so many moles on your back, I could take a pencil and connect all the dots and it would turn out to be a picture, like in the book you do, you connect the dots book. Well, it totally embarrassed me at 9 years old. I didn't take my shirt off at the beach for 2 years. But later in life, in thinking about that, I kind of pitched a story about that should happen to Dick Van Dyke. And we did a whole episode of Dick Van Dyke where he falls asleep and with his shirt off and his kid connects his moles and it comes out a picture of the Liberty Bell. And he goes on, believe it or not. So it was a whole crazy episode that was based on my pain.
Oh, so getting back to something you just said, did you work with Lenny Bruce?
I worked with him, but I was a drummer where he worked, so I talked to him a lot and studied him. And you can't really write his material. He writes it himself. But he was another one who said you got to find it in life. Every day you look out and you see something humorous. That's what it comes from.
Now, Lenny Bruce wasn't exactly a rimshot kind of comic, but did you do rimshots first during his monologue?
Well, he started out as a winner on the Arthur Godfrey Talent Contest. No, he lost it. That was in his act. He lost the Arthur Godfrey Talent Contest to a man who sang I Believe. And so he always remembered that. But he didn't do rimshots, but he did a lot of stuff with percussions. He did do some stuff. He played the drums himself, so we had some kind of a camaraderie.
But, you didn't do rim shots for him during his act.
No. Only to make fun of rim shots.
Right, exactly. Okay.
But the other guys, I did it for real. You know, ba-dum-bum.
So you really had to do that. You played with for comics.
Always, yeah. Why did chicken cross the road to get to the other side? Ba-dum-bum. You learn to do that. You have to do that. Now we don't even do rim shots. The band just says it. The band doesn't play it. The whole band goes, ba-dum-bum.
Right.
But that's the old style of comedy. But still, in a way, has a place.
My guest is Gary Marshall, if you're just joining us. And he directed the new movie Frankie and Johnny. He also directed Pretty Woman and Beaches and created a bunch of sitcoms, including Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and Mork and Mindy. Now, I had always assumed that Happy Days was based on George Lucas's American Graffiti, but I was reading one of my TV reference books, and it turns out American Graffiti was based on a pilot that you did for Happy Days.
Well, I wouldn't say it was based on it. We both were coming out about the same time. I had done an early version of Happy Days. It was called New Family in Town, and it starred Ron Howard and some of the other members of the cast. Henry Winkler, as Fonzie, was not in the original pilot. But I did this pilot, and it did not sell. They said, who cares about the 50s? And then George, meanwhile, was working on his American Graffiti, and his casting director called me up when they were finally ready to shoot it and asked me, could he see my pilot because he wanted to see Ron Howard's performance as a 50s character. And I sent him the pilot, and that's how they cast Ron Howard in American Graffiti.
Now, how did an ethnic kid from the Bronx like yourself write a series about a seemingly non-ethnic family in middle America?
Well, I am Italian. My real name is Masciarelli, and I grew up in the Bronx. And I was raised Protestant in a Jewish neighborhood, yet I'm Italian. So I'm a mix-up of everything, as my sister Penny is. And so we just would write kind of a New York feel. But at the time, it was very difficult to do ethnic things on television. I see now the Brooklyn Bridge has made some inroads in that area. But mostly in my day, there was Molly Goldberg. That was the ethnic show.
Right.
And there was Amos and Andy, and that was that. There was there was the rest all had to be, they had to look like Father Knows Best. So what worked for us is we took the humor of, which is a lot of ethnic humor, but we put it in the mouth of an actor like Ron Howard, and suddenly it comes out funny, but it doesn't, it has a more national base, more of the audience relates to it. Also, the partner I was doing that with was a partner named Tom Miller, and he lived in Milwaukee. So he didn't write and create it. He was producing it with me, and he helped me a lot with that show. He and a man named Eddie Milkus. And so we set it in Milwaukee because Tom's father ran the cleaners in Milwaukee, the Spick and Span cleaners. And so we got the Spick and Span cleaners into the show, so that would help his business there. So Milwaukee was the setting for both Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley.
So tell me, do you have any weird unproduced pilots in your drawer?
Oh, some were produced were pretty weird. Back to the many you know, I was very fortunate in TV that I had really, I guess, four or five shows that really made an impression and would have to be considered hits. But I had 13 that were flops. You know, I did a lot of pilots. I was the genius who came up with a show called The Recruiters, right in the middle of the Vietnam War, where I was doing recruiting young men for the war, which was a quiet, quick one. Boom, that was gone. I also did a show called Me and the Chimp that I thought I'd dabble in animals, but that was a big fiasco. So I had a lot of things go wrong. But the best pilot I ever did never did get on the air.
What was it?
Jerry Belzer and I did a pilot called Sheriff Who, which was our statement against violence. It was a big anti-violent statement, but nobody got it, and they thought it was violent, and so they didn't want it. But many to this day, I still get calls, and we made it a movie called Evil Roy Slade. We took the pilot, and many people to this day will come up to me. A lot of the young people, you know, I figure, well, I've been doing it a long time. These kids, they don't know who I am. The first thing they do when they meet me, they say, can you get me a copy of that Evil Roy Slade, that Sheriff Who thing? That was the hippest, funniest thing I ever saw. I don't know where they saw it. They run this thing at 3 in the morning. But a lot of these young people know that show, and it was probably the best thing Jerry Belzer and I ever did as a pilot. It was just a little too hip for the territory, you know. A little too far out, but we found Alice Cooper had T-shirts made for his band called The Evil Roy Slade. He had them written on. He loved that show too much. And it was only on once, and it was a rerun sometimes late at night. So that was my favorite, and just never happened.
So do you know what your next movie will be?
My next project will be back to a play I had been working on. I have been a very unsuccessful playwright, so I'm still trying that. I had a play on Broadway last 3 nights. It was called The Roast. It was 3 whole nights, so this time I'm trying for at least 4 nights. And it's a play called Wrong Turn at Lungfish. We had it, it was written by Lowell Gans and myself. Lowell is a wonderful screenwriter who wrote Parenthood, Splash, right. City Slickers. So that was up in Chicago for a summer, and we're refixing it now. You know, it was works in progress, and we're going to hope to bring it into off-Broadway or sometime. And then I'll do another picture maybe next summer, but nothing. I like to wait and see what happens. But I do like stories that are romantic or involve a female point of view. I like that.
Well, Gary Marshall, it's been a lot of fun to talk with you. Thanks a lot for talking with us.
Okay, I had fun, Terry. A pleasure. And I love this sound of this microphone. It's so calm. I am going to sleep now. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
Gary Marshall directed the new film Frankie and Johnny. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.